Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. We got a good one in here for you today. I've got Adam Lytle, who's the CEO of Sound Agriculture, on here with me today, guys. So Adam, welcome to the show, man. I'm excited.
Thanks, Mark. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad our teams could put this together. All right, you're going to get the first question, same one that everybody gets right off the bat. Adam, what's it mean for you to be intentional?
So I move pretty fast. I think pretty fast, sometimes too much, and can stumble. So for me, intentional means taking a beat and stepping back and considering something before I say it, before I make a statement. And reflecting so that I'm not putting my foot in my mouth and I'm considering all the angles.
I like it. Taking a beat, take a step back. Good, quick, to the point. I like it, man. Well, Adam, give us a little bit of background on you, a little bit on Sound Agriculture. And you guys have a lot of growth and a lot of the good things going on over there. So talk a little bit about that and tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this space.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So I joined Sound a little over 4 years ago, and it's really been a dream job for me. I wanted to take a crack at being CEO and leading a company after coming up through the commercial side of food and ag tech startups. I have been a chief revenue officer before this of the digital business at Corteva and worked really closely with the seed and crop protection businesses there. I learned a lot about how the larger organization works, who's truly a leader in a lot of inputs. And before that, I had been on the founding team of Granular, which was the SaaS analytics company for growers that Corteva acquired. And shoot, I might have had five or six different roles across finance and ops and then customer success, which was really a trip. That's kind of a separate story about I didn't know what that thing is and got the chance to lead it and was a lot of fun. And then ultimately sales and business development kind of integrated. So that's my background. Originally from Michigan, and went down a quick stint in finance before I got into agriculture and the startup scene.
What brought you from the finance side over to the ag side of things?
Two things. One, I was tired of sleeping on the floor of the office one or two nights a week. Investment banking is incredibly grueling. And at that point in time, it can be worth it. I'm definitely not afraid of hard work. I love it, actually. I'd rather work like that with purpose, but I didn't feel a lot of purpose on it. I remember I would be working on these pitch decks and these beautiful things with like the perfect font size and analysis and all this. And then you meet with someone and they're like, oh, nice idea. And they might throw it in the trash as you're walking out. So I wanted to get closer to an operational role, something where you control your own destiny a little bit. And if you are not there, I tell this to a lot of people, if you are not in that organization, what would be different? Mm-hmm. And if you can't answer that question with something significantly would be different, then I think that's tough for some people, right? Especially later in your career when you want to be making that impact. So that was mostly it. The reason why I went into agriculture specifically is coming from Michigan, coming from the Midwest, spending time on some farms in rural America, my grandmother growing up on a farm. I really found that more interesting than working on like consumer apps and technology, which is common where I'm in the Bay Area. So it was just a great confluence of I care about climate tech and the planet. I care about food and growers, and I really get excited about technology and innovation.
Well, it's very good. I think it's such an exciting, interesting time to be in this industry, especially at the crossroads in the advent of new technologies and AI and CRISPR. And I mean, we've had I've had folks from Inari on here talking about some of the incredible things they're doing, what's going on in the biological space right now. I mean, I feel very grateful actually to be going through a career in the ag industry at this time.
And yeah, it's a lot of fun, especially in the last, I mean, I've been in it for 12, 13 years, which is not nearly as long as some, but on the ag tech side, and it's just picked up steam every year. And while there are cycles, there's more and more excitement and innovation. So I agree, it's a great ride, and we're starting to see some real results. They take longer than most people think they will at the beginning, especially from an investment perspective. But when they hit, they hit.
Yep, absolutely. Well, talk to us a little bit about growing a business in this space. I mean, do you think ag tech differs from a talent attraction and retention standpoint? Is this a, I mean, feel free to talk about the company a little bit too. I mean, I'm sure you have staff in California, but then I know you've got quite a bit of staff across the rest of the country that's, boots on the ground out talking there with your distributors and farmers and things like that. Yeah, just curious what the, does talent attraction retention, does that differ on the ag tech side versus say maybe your traditional conventional retailer or a more conventional product?
I do think it differs in some key ways. In other ways, it's the same because people are people. But let me just say first, for grounding anyone listening, what Sound does, because I think that'll help the rest of the discussion. So Sound is an ag biotech company, and we're really focused on using nature-based solutions to improve ag productivity and climate outcomes. So in particular, our lead product, which is called Source, is a chemistry product that works with biologicals to get more nutrients into the plant. And we do that by activating over 200 species of soil microbes to fix more nitrogen and solubilize more phosphorus, which are the two most important macronutrients for the crop. You also, because you get a larger, stronger crop with deeper roots, will get more micronutrients. And so we kind of call it like caffeine for the microbes that get them going at a higher rate. And what's great is it works with what you already have in your soil. There are some differences depending on soil type and your practices with synthetic fertilizer, but it's a really great low use rate, easy to use product. And that's been growing very nicely. Last year, we got over 1.5 million acres. Continue to grow this year despite lower fertilizer prices, and just looking to build a business with multiple products in the pipeline, and already selling additional ones beyond Source. So we're excited to continue to grow in the nutrient efficiency category, which is here to stay. It's a question of how those products are used, where they're used, and where
Right.
growers get the most out of them.
Yeah. Okay. It's a fascinating technology. Fascinating. I mean, just a really cool application to, especially at this time when biological companies are just springing out of nowhere. This is like just a little like it's an interesting niche play. I guess is that the right way to put it? It's a niche product
Well,
because actually enhancing either what's already there or what they're also or other bugs that they're putting on the soil.
yeah, I mean, our founder, one of the founders and chief technology officer, likes to call it an orthogonal space or orthogonal product, which is, a fancy way of saying it's enabling or on the side, but it's not directly in that biologicals or microbial space. And that's nice because there's so many, to your point, that it's hard to differentiate. And when you talk to a grower or a dealer or distributor about a chemistry product that looks and feels like crop protection and doesn't have shelf life issues and doesn't have handling issues, it's really attractive because you can just throw it in your tank and go. Yet it is synergistic with a lot of those microbes. So that positioning, that story is pretty distinct, as you're saying. Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
All right. So
I can ask
attracting,
your people question though if you want. Sorry, I didn't.
yeah, let's get to this. Attracting a team
Yeah.
around that. I mean, we could probably spend the whole half an hour just talking about like all of that stuff. But give me an overview from your perspective. You've been in this startup space or high growth space. You've been in it's ag tech space. So I'm really interested in just like building that team. We can even maybe blend that into culture just a little bit.
Sure.
While we're there and see where we go with it. But yeah, talk a little bit about that.
So look, the major difference in this space versus others I've worked in, and I've worked in e-commerce, I've worked in law, I've worked in banking, I've worked in government, so a fair bit of that exposure is mission and purpose. Aggies and folks in this space care about something beyond the money, and that's true in some other industries too, but very much in ag. So tying this into the company and the culture, if you don't care about making a grower's life better or helping the climate through making production ag more climate champion as opposed to a tractor, or feeding the planet, you shouldn't be at this company. And by and large, you probably don't want to be an ag. Because it's hard. Like at the same time, it is harder to be successful in this space than it is in like B2B SaaS companies, software companies. And I think you need that mission-driven approach to drive you every single day. And then double that with being at a startup or a growth company where it's a roller coaster. There was always ups, there are always downs. And yes, that's the case in the larger ad companies too, but it's exacerbated when you're at a startup who's not yet profitable and driving towards high growth because you're not happy with, 3 to 5% growth. You're looking at 30, 40% plus. So that's the main one, and that's who we're looking for. And that by and large is who we've got. We use something called CultureAmp to test engagement and really be purposeful, right back to the theme of this, more intentional about our culture. And 97% have like high agreement around mission driven with the company. And we measure that every 6 months along with other factors. There are other things we could talk about and nuances, but I would kind of say that's the big one.
Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this and our coaching programs, and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. Yeah. Can you talk about the assessment tool that you guys use to measure
Sure.
engagement? I know a lot of people probably benefit from understanding more about that. Adam, I mean, usually when my team and I get brought into the conversation, it's when it's gone a little bit too far. And I would rather work with a company in many cases. I mean, I'm glad to work with all the companies, but it would be fun to be proactive instead of putting out fires from a training and coaching perspective, in a people development sense. But yeah, talk to us a little bit about what that tool is and how you guys put it to use to keep intentionally curating the culture.
So we started this proactively shortly after I joined, and it's because I've used tools like this in the past and I've had great mentors who have showed me how to use them before that. And I'm a huge fan of taking fairly cheap and easy, let's call it, SaaS solutions and getting best in class and then using those as part of the culture and the expectation. So we use two things probably relevant for this conversation. One is called CultureAmp, and it's essentially a gussied up, easier to use analytics tool of like a SurveyMonkey or a Google Docs where you can poll people with a number of questions. You can also benchmark it versus other industries, which is really cool because then you get a sense of where there's a bigger or smaller problem. I'll give you an example. If I asked you or your average employee, are you happy with your pay? Like, and let's say a company 60% or 70% are happy with their pay, or is that good or bad, right? Like, and not for you to answer, but it's one of those questions where you're never going to get 100%, and maybe you don't want to. But the point is, whereas something else, are you happy in your job? You want 100%. So it gives you a lot of aspects to take that data and figure out where there's an issue or not and where you want to target your solutions. It doesn't give you the solution, but it makes it so much easier later on. And then longitudinally over years or every 6 months, increments when we've done this, you can see how the sentiment is changing. You can also do cohort analysis by teams, help managers, all that other thing. So it's a pretty fun tool if you use it well.
Yeah, I like it. I'm gonna dig into that and take a look at it and share that with some friends, because I know that's one thing, we often don't have a lot of eyes on. And I like the idea of benchmarking too. I said, people ask, well, how's the podcast doing? I'm like, well, considering the fact that we have a relatively small target audience, and we're doing 1,000 downloads a month, I feel like we're doing pretty good.
And it's all relative, age and everything
But I'm
else.
making it up. I have no idea whether that's good or not. There's nothing to compare against because there's no other ag leadership podcast that does this kind of conversational interview. So it's like it's apples and oranges to everything else that's out there. So is that good or bad? I have no idea.
That's
Feels
pretty
good,
funny.
right? But we may, I mean, that's where unintentional leadership leads to, it stems usually from like, well, this feels good. You know, I mean, it's often not made from some sort of grounded in truth or grounded in experience or grounded in something that actually assists in the decision making. So, yeah, fascinating stuff. What about culture building? So that's a piece of it, but I'm sure with, you know, with what you guys are doing to measure, what else works in your guys' space, in this ag tech space, for building a great culture that people want to be a part of? If you got 97% on your score, that are bought in, you must be doing something well.
Yeah, I think so, and a lot of it is due to the team we have and the folks we're bringing on, and you know that's very much on the mission part. There are other aspects where we definitely got to improve, and so it just depends what you're focusing on at the time. But I don't actually think the culture piece is different in ag than other industries. I think that's more ubiquitous on best practices around companies, and more related to the stage and the size. So, for example, if you're an early stage company, you're founding, you're sub 10 people, I think the culture is going to be more organic. It's going to be co-developed along the way, and each person, very much down to a person, is going to be developing that, where you don't need to put as much focus on it. Once you get to, call it 50 people, or maybe even earlier than that, 25, 30, I do think it's important to start being intentional about it, and certainly past that. And so when I joined, I'll just kind of tell you a story of the narrative. When I joined Sound, I was asking that question. I think everyone should ask that question and really get into it when they're joining a company. What's the culture like? What are the values? And it was a little fuzzy, but we kind of coalesced around a couple things. And they stood out: creativity and respect, and really liked that. But at the same time, we needed a little more commercial aspects and pace as we evolve. So then the question is, how do you layer on? How do you evolve that? So at that point in time, we really kept it in the value. So culture equals values plus the things that fill in around the edges. And we had a cross-functional team at different levels that made suggestions, and we evolved it to four things at that point: respect, creativity, boldness, and ownership. And then there's a onboarding. I have a CEO session where I meet every single employee who joins. We grew over 100 people, and we talk about this, what it means to them, and we went on from there. The last piece I'll say before pausing is, we then layered on additional aspects of what we called cultural dimensions, where we actually have a slide and a representation of things like formality, informality. Are we inside out or outside in type culture? About eight or nine dimensions, and we show that visually, and we talk about what this means or not. Consensus-driven culture versus a tops-down culture, for example. And a lot of companies are not willing to say that, honestly. I've actually never been to a company who's been willing to say that in that specific of a way. And as a result, you can let people know: are you into this? Do I like it? Do I not like it? Do I want to opt in? And it gives you permission, or invites you to operate in a certain way authentically yourself within that known culture. So that's been really cool. That's been helpful. And then from there, you've got your kind of classic values champions every month. And then we also change people's comp and bonus because of living the values. So how you live the values on your annual review impacts your promotion path and how much you're paid. Performance is two-thirds of your bonus determination. How you live the values is one-third. So it's really got some teeth, which again is not as explicit in other places I've been.
Right. So you actually have, we're actually financially then incentivizing the behaviors,
Yes.
adherence to the values that we'd like to see.
Correct.
Fascinating. It's so I'm gonna just riff a little bit on some things that I've seen across the broad scope of the industry. That would be the maybe the most teeth that I've seen in somebody that's trying to get people to adhere to values. Usually it's around something that a company wants to see, such as a sales behavior, more aggressive prospecting. a larger number of proposals, client growth, current client growth, whatever, right? I mean, those things.
Which is a little more well defined usually. And the
Right.
tough part with this, it is vague. What does boldness mean, for example?
Yeah,
However,
absolutely.
if you do a good job, I would argue you can bring that to life. And it's not sacrosanct. It's not everyone doesn't have to do it exactly the same, but it means that if you have an opportunity to do something, you're going to take that bolder choice versus the meeker choice. You're
Right.
going to maybe be okay with being a little more of a bull in a china shop versus asking for permission. And if
Yes.
you know ag, is that typical? No.
No, not at all. And so and yeah, to my point in saying this is when we work with sales teams in agribusiness, and I ask that salesperson, that sales rep, whether it's at the retail level or in the manufacturer level, service provider level, whatever. Generally, I'm going to go 7 out of 10 can't accurately describe to me how they get paid. And yes, whatever, the money hits the account every other Friday, stuff like that. Yes, of course, basic things, maybe big bonuses. But as far as like how I really generate revenue for this business. Okay. And then B, like knowing how I'm going to generate revenue, like where my revenue, where my pipeline's coming from, what's in my pipeline, what do I need to do from a relationship building perspective? Where do I need to be asking for more
Your
things?
whole
Whatever.
business planning process with your sales motion, yeah.
It's very poor. It's very poor. So I know that's not necessarily the same thing as trying to get people to adhere to values, but what I want people to hear is when you actually are intentional about sitting down and having measurements. And sitting down and actually thinking about what are the values that we would like to see showing up in my salespeople. If being bold is one of those things, that means I need to be willing to be out there making more asks, speaking at more events. And I'm sure there's a whole list of subjective things that could qualify as being bold.
Well, here's
And
another one. It probably means by implication you're okay failing sometimes. The
yeah,
company
exactly.
has to be okay with that. So you're right. There's lots of different things, but if you're not defining that for the team, then they're gonna not lean into it, and you're gonna not gonna get the consistent execution you want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's some stuff for people to chew on just right there, Adam. I mean,
Yeah.
just take it, just rewind like 5 or 6 minutes and go back through that and just, and hear Adam talk about, how they're intentionally curating and actually putting this into a format that people can manage to, that leaders can manage to, right? And then reward for. I believe
Yeah,
that
and
that.
if folks, I mean, if folks ever want to go deeper on that, happy to share. I don't know if we'll share contact info at the end, but we've thought about it a lot, and with our board and others, and it's a passion area. So happy to share or trade notes. I love learning from others on this.
Absolutely. Maybe we do a master class on it someday. I like it. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about you. Let's get to know Adam Lytle a little bit more. What's been the biggest challenge that, or the biggest hurdle that you've ever had to overcome in your career?
My career, it's been very opportunistic in the sense that I didn't have a straight line path. I think I'm actually jealous of folks sometimes who are like, this is going to be my thing and my purpose. And I think agriculture, it's fairly common. You grew up on a farm, or you're tied to a certain community. That's what you know, and you love it, and you're going to be an ag your whole life. I sort of came into it where I could have gone several routes, and I fell in love with it, call it mid-career. And I think the struggle had been, how do I not be an outsider? How do, when you're not a farm kid, you don't have as much credibility. And so I've been probably over 100 farms now in my career, and talking to a lot of folks. I've been in peer groups with growers on a wall and different industry and aspects, but man, it took years, and I'm still learning every day. But that transition and how difficult it was, and how much respect and humility I definitely had for the space to get ensconced in it, was a big challenge, and I think continues to be one. But after a decade, I like to think that I'm closer to it now. But when I decided that I wanted this to be my be all end all in the space that I'm going to retire in, that ended up being an uphill battle.
It's being an outsider in the ag industry, and I also am one. It can be a bit of folks that probably just grew up in it, normal, like grew up on a normal corn and soybean operation, or on a hog, operation, or a
Edmond
or
Farm,
yeah,
maybe.
whatever. Like, I mean, we probably don't, recognize it, but so I grew up on a leech farm. My dad is a wholesale bait dealer. Like, that's what we did, right? So aquaculture, sure, but that's not the same
That's
thing when you
cool.
start hanging out with, the corn and bean crowd necessarily, right? Or the livestock crowd. Like, you're not from here. And so I have a degree in agriculture education. So that's where, I mean, I've been in ag my entire career, but it's all earned, right? So everything that I had to, everything I know about ag, which I'd like to think is relatively extensive or at least knowledgeable, has been learned. So I can completely relate.
Yeah, and sometimes when you find religion later in life, in a way, it's stronger than those who were inherited it. But I like that. I think the space is really opened up in the last 10, 5 to 10 years from what I've seen. And so the diversity there of opinions and backgrounds is really cool. And
I
so I've
agree. Yeah, I agree. There's so much growth and so much diversity of ideas, and so many cool things happening as a result of that. And I also think, from a traditional perspective, it does force people to have to not just be more open-minded, but continue to level up. Because you get somebody, it's almost like when you have an immigrant that comes to America, they tend to outwork the native, the folks that have been here for a while.
It's a high bar.
You can't take it for granted. And then you get somebody who's young and hungry and has a different perspective. It's actually quite easy for that person to come in and shake things up and get noticed. So, what's been one of your biggest wins as a leader?
One thing I'm particularly proud of, and this is not something that I've done, but it's very much a we thing, is I've seen folks who have been part of the organization that I'm with continue on and become leaders elsewhere. So maybe it's a little bit of a cliche, but if you are a leader who can develop other leaders who are successful, that's in a way the largest validation or compliment of your ability. Another version of that, if you're a good leader and you disappear, the organization still does well. So it's not dependent on you individually. And so we see a lot of folks from, I'd say, the granular experience historically go elsewhere and now have founded companies, are leading companies, and just innovated in different ways and kind of spread into the industry, given that that company was founded in 2014 and acquired in 2017. And in the next few years, you've sort of seen that evolution. So some of them have been on my team that would have reported into me, or colleagues or others. So just incredibly proud of that. And that, I think, that is a big mark of success on the people side. And at Sound, I think I'm seeing similar patterns and similar evolution. I think we're known for a fairly high quality team. We believe that internally and externally. And so as we continue, it obviously requires business success as well, which we are seeing and continuing to grow. But I really hope, looking back in a few years, we'll see that same dynamic going elsewhere, founding companies, continuing to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it says in the good book, you'll know a tree by its fruit. And to me, that's the ultimate definition of whether somebody has been a successful leader or not, an intentional leader or not, right? There should be evidence that, not just that they were good in the role, or that person led that company, but was that company better off because they were there? And are there people left in that person's wake in a positive sense, that are continuing to influence positively? So
100%.
who have you looked up to? Have you admired in your career?
Man, there's so many. I'll give you two quick answers. In one sense, I have a CEO in particular who I won't name names because I've worked for a few, but I pattern match 80% of what I do, and then I kind of tweak and improve the last 20. So I do think it's critical to see what good looks like and learn from that. You can't do that through textbooks, and so that's why it's so important to work for good organizations and good people above all else. I think some people will choose to prioritize the perfect role or perceived perfect role versus the people and that mentorship. But I'd say even more core fundamentally, my father-in-law is someone I've learned a lot from. Just probably too much sharing, but I was raised mostly by a single mother, my grandparents. And so with my father-in-law, we got very close, and He was expert in his field on the mechanical engineering side, and just like from an ethical perspective and family man and all the things that I hadn't seen before. He's no longer with us, unfortunately, as of a few years ago. But I constantly go back to what would he say, what would he do, and try to listen to him.
Yeah, it's cool to have those, to think back on who's had the impact, who would I look up to, and I often my father's no longer around, but I think about, I would always work harder for him in many ways than I would for myself. And so what could I be doing that would please the old man today, right? And in more recent years, that's moved on to my spiritual father, because I'm like, well, this one I can still chat with. I can still reach him. So like, all right, what do you want me to do today? Who am I interviewing on the podcast? And so interestingly enough, I don't, Adam, I don't book the occasionally I'll reach out to the team and I'll say, hey, I want to talk, I want this person on the podcast, hound them until they get on here. But in many cases, it's just whoever comes. And so I will look at, and I give my team some parameters, like, hey, these are the types of people that we want to be interviewing. That's it. But then I say, go, you guys go get them, because they'll think about it differently than I do. But it also comes from a place of surrender, because I'll say, okay, from a spiritual sense, I'm like, listen, who do you need me talking to? Right, let's make a resource for them, and let's put that in people's earbuds and truck speakers and see if it helps.
Yeah, I love that.
And so it's like a game.
And you'll
So.
get a lot more variety that way too, which is nice. You won't
Totally.
over-index to a certain profile,
Exactly.
which gets to a lot more interesting conversations, I'm guessing.
Yep. I knew that if I was out there picking, I would pick people like me. I'd pick people that I knew. I'd probably go through a list of my fraternity people that are in leadership roles in the company, because that's easier to get to them. it's worked out, brought us a lot of great people like you, that I may potentially pass over if I just wasn't looking or hadn't, been in the right place at the right time. Like I ran into some of your team at Commodity Classic and already had a couple members of your team on the podcast. We're like, you should get Adam on the show. I'm like, we should get Adam on the show. Let's go. Of course we should.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah,
Yeah, man.
that's great to connect, and especially with the involvement of the team that you've had on too. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Last couple of questions here. Just what for you, what's good to read? What kind of books do you like, podcasts that you'd have that you recommend for our listeners?
So I'll give you kind of my standard, my favorite book and influential book that my grandfather gave me was How to Win Friends and Influence People. So it's a classic, Dale Carnegie. I definitely recommend that for folks who haven't read it, especially coming up earlier in life. A fun one that I don't think is as common, especially in agriculture, is called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. It's pretty well known in startup circles. Ben Horowitz, who's one of the VCs behind Andreessen Horowitz, wrote it about a very difficult to grow startup story and pivot and all these other things. It reminds you of the inglorious experience of a startup, not all sexy, exciting all the time, and a lot of hard, good lessons in there too. So I'd recommend that one. I podcasts, let me think. A fun one just to kind of make, I like Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. That's one of my favorite comedy ones to lighten things up.
Cool. I like it. We got to lighten it up a little bit. We do get a lot of serious ones. I think the number one most recommended book has been Extreme Ownership by Jocko, which in nothing, it's a great book. I'm not like he's done very well with that book and admire it. And I even want to go through some of his leadership programs. And that's, and that's even what I do for a living. But it's great, but it's fun to, we got to lighten it up a little bit. We got to throw some fiction in once in a while. I've still, it's important. Come.
Yeah,
What do you do?
I like the serious learning book, the fun fiction book, back and forth. I try to go back and forth.
Yep, got to mix it up. What do you do to keep your energy up?
Mostly exercise, but I don't do it quite as much as I should. So when I'm very one of those people, classic, where if I exercise that day, I'm probably going to feel good that day and the next day. And if I get caught up and overwhelmed with stuff and behind and it's 3 days and I'm not, I definitely get crankier, lower energy. And so if I'm exercising at least every other day, and then I started journaling actually couple of years ago, and that helped me become more reflective, more intentional, and in again the roller coaster of the job, be able to get the feelings out and then have a little more peace with them, and figure out that next path forward.
Good, I like it. Super important stuff, guys. This is you wouldn't know this, Adam, but this our Thriving Leader program is designed to help bring out that next best version of the people that come. And so we're a people development company for all intents and purposes, training and coaching. That's what we do. That's the boring title. How we do that is through a whole person approach. And so we start them off with a 6 or 7 a.m. kickboxing and or CrossFit workout at the onset of every event.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's built as a discovery moment because most people won't force themselves into that, right? They would roll out of bed, grab a coffee, get into their email and social media and the news and everything, and then show up at the event at 8 o'clock. And so we said, no, like, we're not about that. We're not here to do the traditional thing. So we get them into kickboxing, or we get them into a CrossFit or something to activate their body early. We give them a little bit of time to get some breakfast, start at 9 o'clock. And what happens is our training room, our classroom, is massively more vibrant at 9 a.m. And the trust that we've built with them is already so much higher. So we can go places that most people can't from a training perspective.
I love that so much. I'm not surprised at all, but getting folks to do it and that commitment is the hard part. And once you've done, it's all rolling downhill after that, right?
Yep, absolutely. So it helps a lot, but I don't say that to plug the program. I say that to highlight how stinking important it is to actually invest in your physical being.
Yeah, at this point, I feel like people know that. It's interesting, Mark, right? Because like at this point, it's talked about, everyone knows it, but it's hard to do, right? It's like you have self-awareness, but you can't change, or right? So it's putting those habits and the excuses in place. And that's the thing, you know, myself and others, but making it consistent, right? Those are where the tricks come in and the key comes in.
Well, it's, you know, to go back to your earlier point around, you know, the financial, the bonus incentive that's tied to seeing the behaviors that you'd like to see, right? We could write these behaviors down on a sheet of paper. These are the core values of the company. This is what we expect to see. And then what? But like, if you don't see it, is it punitive? Like, what's the, you have no other options to enforce with.
Right.
Right. So you have, you know, it's taking a stand to say, this is what we want to see. This is what we expect to see, but then actually giving them more of a carrot than a stick. We're doing the same thing with our program, where basically we don't give them the option to not go. We don't say this is an optional workout. We say, this is the agenda. You know, wear some shorts and a t-shirt and bring some tennis shoes. And we prepare them with that ahead of time. We give them very little information. But what I, if we didn't create that, if we didn't curate that intentional experience for them, they wouldn't do it for themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And that's intentional leadership.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. All right. Hey, it's been a great conversation. I've appreciated the time. I wish we could, you know, go on and dive into each one of these things at length, but, we have businesses to run and schedules to keep. So thanks for doing the show, Adam. Is there any tell us where we go to find out more about Sound Agriculture, and then any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, really fun conversation. My pleasure, Mark. Thanks again. And if you want to find out more about Sound Agriculture, www.sound.ag, and feel free to reach out to me at a.lytle@sound.ag. LITLE. It's a bit of a weird last name, but yeah, reach out with anything, and I will definitely get back. I read every email, strange as that is.
I love it. Very good, man. All right. Thanks for being on.
All right. Take care, Mark. Bye.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.